So every now and then, I have to give credit where credit is due, even if it's someone who you very seldom hear me give any credit to. And I am going to do that on this bright and beautiful Tuesday morning as the month of June winds down. And I got to tell you, where I am right now, it is beautiful outside. It's sunny. It was very rainy this morning, and I didn't have high hopes for the day. But right about now, I have a sense of how beautiful Florida is and how grateful I am to live here. And even more importantly, how grateful I am that we missed the Andrew Gillum bullet. So I said I was going to give credit where credit is due, and that credit today would go to our former president, Barack Obama, who said when the gubernatorial race was taking place in the state of Florida that Andrew Gillum would make history. And I remember there were a whole bunch of people at the Ice Palace Film Studios in Miami, and President Obama said, "Andrew has lived the American dream, and if you give him your vote, he will fight to make sure every child in Florida has the same chance." President Obama was enthusiastic. He wasn't president anymore, but he was still running around saying important things. And Andrew Gillum has, in fact, lived the American dream, the dream of being found naked and confused in a hotel room full of prescription drugs and vomit and two other men, one of whom was a porn star who had a profile on Rent.men. And of course, assuring voters that he had not been the one using the meth that was found there. But in fact, nobody believed that. Whoops, I don't know. That's not usual. And then, of course, he announced that he was going to rehab. And the reason he was using 4 years ago, he said, was because he was depressed over losing to Governor Ron DeSantis. Look, all I can say to the former president and to Andrew Gillum and his loved ones, hopefully no other American child and certainly no other Floridian ever gets the chance to live out that particular dream. All right. Hat tip, Dan Greenfield. He's still living out the dream. He was just indicted on 21 charges stemming from an FBI investigation that goes all the way back to 2016. And President Obama and the Democrats knew that investigation was taking place because it started under that administration. And they still said, "Oh, he's going to make history." And they encouraged him to run for governor of Florida. And the best line of all, when you look back at the rally that they had that day, was when former President Obama claimed that the character of our country is on the ballot. He was right, and we chose the man with more character. This indictment says that when he was the mayor, and when he was, running for the governor's mansion, he and his minions moved money through a variety of nonprofits and PACs, including something called the National Black Justice Coalition, which describes itself as America's leading national civil rights organization dedicated to the empowerment of Black, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgenders. And it also boasts of having enlisted the leadership and partnership of Andrew Gillum to help build the strategy and blueprint for this network at every level as part of its Good Trouble Network. See, I'm not so sure that a 21-count indictment really qualifies as good trouble. It also accuses Sharon Lettman Hicks, who was the CEO of the National Black Justice Coalition, of diverting about 50 grand for Gillum's personal use. This NBJC organization intersected with Soros and his network. It signed a bunch of petitions and letters and all kinds of activist agendas right alongside of all the other lefty organizations funded by the Kresge Foundation, the Haas Foundation, the Zedek Social Justice Fund, among many others. I love when these, Jewish organizations go out of their way to support these organizations as though somehow if they beat their breasts long enough, they're going to get African Americans to stop calling them names. And hey, listen, this is This is a guy who now has the top party hack lawyer defending him, Mark Elias. That was, of course, Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign general counsel. This is a guy who figured in Russiagate. This was Kamala's general counsel. This is Biden's go-to lawyer for the 2020 election. Elias is not the guy who represents you when you've become a complete disgrace and the Democrats want nothing more to do with you. This is the guy who shows that the hand of the party still rests on the head of its former favorite Florida son. Elias actually had the nerve to say, "We look forward to putting this case to rest and giving Andrew and his family peace of mind once and for all." Okay. So which family, considering that he's apparently now we understand that he's bisexual, his wife or his husband? I'm just asking. You know, this guy has covered all the bases. You know, he's African-American. He's bisexual. Who knows? What else can he add to that? About, you know, not very bright. This is the guy who handed a giant $100,000 check. You know how they make those big checks? Well, I've done organizations. You make this big, giant check, and it's just for the ceremony where you give it to the organization, right? And then, of course, you have a real check in an envelope that you hand to the treasurer of that organization. Well, back in 2019, Gillum handed one of those giant $100,000 checks to the chairman of the Florida Democratic Party. It was supposedly from his PAC, Forward Florida Action. Well, it turns out that you can't cash a big giant cash, and the money didn't even exist. The indictment mentions that Forward Florida, which is a related group, played a role in what the indictment describes as Gillum and Hicks having defrauded individuals of $150,000 of his $250,000 contribution. I can't wait to hear how Mark Elias is going to defend this crap. Oh, but trust me, he will. Because Democrats have not abandoned Andrew Gillum, no matter how far gone he is, no matter how his luge slide through politics has been. His appeal in the last decade was obvious. Democrats are looking for more Obamas. They found Cory Booker. They found Gillum and a number of other young black technocrats whose rhetoric fused the big tech and the Baptist church, right? See, the Obama effect was the illusion that the left could comfortably bridge the contradictions between the white elites and the black base, between the values of Martha's Vineyard and the inner city without having to give up any power or any control. So that's where we are. Andrew Gillum is still on the Democrat Party's map. This is a guy whose campaign line used to be, "Bring it home." Now, the pastor, Jeremiah, what was his name? Reverend, you know who I'm talking about, the pastor for Obama's church in Chicago. He used to say, you know, the chickens are coming home to roost, and apparently the justice system is trying to bring Andrew Gillum's chicken home. "I spent the last 20 years of my life in public service. I will continue to fight for the people." That was his response to the indictment. By the way, the last time that he held public office was in 2018. There have been misconduct allegations against him going back to 2014 when he first ran for mayor. So apparently his public service since then mainly seems to consist of angry tweeting things about Governor Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis and Republicans want to erase us from the history books, and now from the halls of Congress, voters will remember this tyranny in November. Oh, come on. And then Gillum had the nerve to say, "Not today, Satan." Goodness gracious. It looked a little Satan-esque, a little devilish, that scene of you in that hotel with all them dirty sheets and methamphetamine all over the place. But hey, you know, point a finger at Ron DeSantis, who's so squeaky clean it's even painful for me to have to look at him. "One of the most inspiring, gifted candidates ever." That's how Barack Obama explained to we the people this Andrew Gillum character. And, of course, Joe Biden, same thing. one of the most exciting new young leaders who's on the way to reclaiming America's soul. Did he also say he was clean and articulate? Oh, no, that's what he said about Barack Obama. Instead, Gillum, just like Barack Obama, just like Joe Biden, lost his soul and shows no signs of getting it back. Florida is no longer in play for Democrats, just so you know. If you still have friends who are Democrats, or if you still have some allegiance to the Democrat Party, let me make this as perfectly clear as I can to you. There is zero chance that Democrats are going to regain a foothold in the state of Florida. Just zero. Not right now. I mean, I don't know what will happen in 10 years or 12 years, but certainly not right now. And of course, one of the most despicable things that I've ever seen, one of the saddest things that I've ever seen, was this tractor trailer full of illegal immigrants, dead illegal immigrants. Because this is the cost that the Biden policy actually has. You know, everybody likes to say, oh, what's the matter with you? These are hardworking people. These are good people. These are nice people. Well, guess what? Right now, there's 46 dead people because of this open border policy. And apparently, that's only the beginning, because summer's upon us. And it's going to get brutally hot in that desert, as if it wasn't hot enough, you know, during the months of February, March. It's going to get even worse. And they are going to be crowded into trucks like they were in this case. Probably should take a quick break. Let me take a break. Don't forget to download their app, 850 WFTL. I'll be right back. Look, I don't watch The View, and I don't even know anybody who watches The View. But every now and then, there's something so outrageous will happen on The View that it'll make all the front pages of the various papers that I read online. And apparently, you know, Whoopi Goldberg and Samuel Jackson, all these people really think nothing about making insane racist comments about Clarence Thomas. It's mind-boggling. It's not news to me, of course, because I have a conservative African-American husband. I've worked for conservative African-American, candidates. So I know how they're treated by others. It's just really just so despicable to me. I just don't understand it. You don't have to agree with me on everything, but don't accuse me of not, you know, liking myself or liking other Hispanics, because I don't think you should have a border that's wide open. Look at what you have had. This is so outrageous to me that we now see 46 bodies, okay, in a truck that was used to smuggle illegal immigrants. And nobody wants to point the finger at who's really at fault for this. Because I know who's at fault. This is Joe Biden's. Their lives and their deaths are really on Joe Biden's shoulders, or on his whatever the proper expression is. It makes me crazy that they get away with this stuff over and over again. You know, a judge just blocked New York City from letting non-citizens vote. Can you believe we even have that as a conversation in this country? That this mayor, who can't get crime under control, wanted to let non-citizens vote for mayor and some other officers, and a judge blocked it and said, no, 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 no. It's against the state and the federal constitution. So now can we have voter ID? I mean, does anybody, you know, is anybody out there? Why would non-citizens be voting? Somebody just answer that question for me. Why would you want that? You don't. And that's what's so amazing to me, is that we tolerate this kind of nonsense coming out of our elected officials. It just makes me cringe. It really does. And so what we found was 46 dead people inside of a van. And there's no way that you can blame anyone but Joe Biden for this. It was an 18-wheeler truck. It happened to be a refrigerated truck, just not on, so the refrigeration doesn't work. And they were on a remote back road in San Antonio, somewhere in southwest San Antonio. A city worker heard somebody crying for help just before 6 p.m. yesterday. So officers arrived at the site of this tractor trailer rig, and they found a body on the ground outside the vehicle, which had a door that was partially open. Another 16 people, four of whom were kids, were taken to hospitals with heat-related illnesses. And the fire chief there said they were hot to the touch and dehydrated. There was no water found in the truck. They were suffering from heat stroke, exhaustion. There was no visible working AC unit on that rig. Now, the temperatures yesterday in Texas, in that particular city, reached 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, I don't know about the rest of you, but when you get into your car in Florida and it's been 92 degrees outside and you climb into your car, it is like a furnace. So they were sitting in that furnace. Three people were taken into custody, but we're not sure if they were the ones who were doing this human trafficking. They were not found with the truck, so who knows? The truck obviously was smuggling migrants into the United States. And let's see what the U.S. Department of Homeland Security does now, right? They have nobody to send to even do an investigation. They're too busy trying to, you know, channel the people coming across the border right now, this minute, while we're speaking. What a human tragedy, right? Mexico's foreign minister, Marcelo Ebrard, in a post on Twitter, called the deaths of the migrants in the truck a tragedy in Texas. He said consular officials would go to the hospitals where the victims were taken to help wherever possible. A spokesman for the Honduran foreign ministry was sending someone. Two Guatemalans were in there. Minors, mind you. So, listen, I stand alongside of Texas Governor Greg Abbott, who said these deaths are attributed to the policies of President Joe Biden. They are. The Republican governor said the deaths are on Biden. They are a result of his deadly open border policies. They show the deadly consequences of his refusal to enforce the law. Illegal immigrants have been intercepted in the area where we're talking about this I-35 highway, which runs through San Antonio from the Mexican border. It's a big time smuggling corridor. I've actually been on that corridor. He said that illegal immigrants have been intercepted in the area regularly since July of 2017, when 10 people died after they were traveling in a tractor trailer that San Antonio police found in a Walmart parking lot. The driver of that truck was sentenced to life in prison for his role. Just saying, who are you going to blame this on? It's obviously not Donald Trump didn't do this. Even though the January 6th committee will try and make it. Donald Trump did. By the way, they're having a special session tonight. I actually got a text message last night from somebody asking me, like, what is this all about? They have a deluge of evidence. And I said, it is much ado about nothing, like the entire January 6th committee hearings. Much ado about nothing. And they just continue to look worse and worse and worse. Now you got Liz Cheney begging Democrats to vote for her in a Republican primary because Republicans aren't going to vote for her. I mean, she's heinous. You know, every time somebody, one of my listeners, I think it was Tony, said she looks like Torquemada. You know, have you seen how Liz Cheney's face has changed since she's been doing this, whatever it is she thinks she's doing? She's just grotesque. And this whole committee is grotesque. But don't worry, because the more that the world sees this kind of behavior, the more they are going to be grateful when the conservatives and Republicans take back the House, the Senate, and eventually the White House. Congratulations. And when we come back from this break, I'm going to be talking with somebody from the law firm that handled Joe Kennedy, the football coach's case. And, you know, there is nothing... That's right, Reverend Wright, Jeremiah Wright. That was the pastor of Barack Obama's church in Chicago. You know, the chickens came home to roost on 9/11. Ugh, these people are so vile. But you know, Joe Kennedy was the football coach at a public school in the state of Washington. Just like to kneel at the 50-yard line after the game. Never invited anybody to kneel with him. Players joined him because they wanted to. And so that case went all the way to the Supreme Court. And, of course, he prevailed yesterday. His attorneys, and we're going to be talking with Stephanie Taub. She is one of the lead attorneys from First Liberty on the case when we come back from the next break. And during that break, I want you to download the app. It's the 850 WFTL app. Actually, download all of our apps. You know, the 640 Fox Sports, download that app if you want to know what's going on in the wide, wide world of sports. If you listen to one of the music stations, download our music apps. We have X102. We have Sunny. We have KBG. What's the other one called? I forgot. RMF. And Party 90. We got a bunch of stations. Just, you know, go to your app store, Google Hubbard Radio, and download all the apps. Because you'll have a field day, and you can win money and win prizes and all that other stuff. And plus, we're trying to, you know, have as many of these apps downloaded as possible. Of course, you all have the 850 WFTL app downloaded on your phone, on your iPad, everywhere else. Because if you don't, you have failed me. I know you don't want to do that. All right, let me take a break, and we'll be back with Stephanie Taub, one of the lead attorneys on the Joe Kennedy case. And welcome back. Joyce Kaufman with you. And as I promised, I have Stephanie Taub. She serves as senior counsel with the First Liberty Institute, which is, of course, an organization that focuses on making sure that our religious liberties are protected. She's been advocating for the rights of business leaders and employees. And it's really, it's a great day, Stephanie. That's all I can say. You know, looking at Joseph Kennedy's case regarding prayer at the 50-yard line, you guys have to be feeling pretty darn good.
Well, it sure was a landmark victory for religious liberty, and I'm so glad to be able to talk about it with you today.
Yeah. Now, you know, I have to, you know, periodically ask myself, why would this even be a question? This was not anyone trying to coerce anyone else into some sort of religious expression. It was such an innocent act. Why did this case even happen?
Well, unfortunately, we see these sorts of situations all the time. Over the past few decades, school districts often think that they're required to turn schools into religion-free zones. And so you do see these sorts of reactions where school district officials go too far and they infringe on the private religious exercise of teachers, of coaches, of students. And so this is a mistaken understanding of the Constitution. And the reason, one of the reasons why this decision from the Supreme Court is so important is because it gets at the root cause of this anti-religious hostility that has just permeated through the school districts of this country, and to ensure that school districts cannot discriminate on the basis of religion.
So what happens next to someone like Coach Kennedy? I mean, obviously, winning the lawsuit's not the end of the story. He is a man of principle. Does he get his job back?
He should. The Supreme Court granted him a victory, and unless the Bremerton School District wants to defy the Supreme Court, all that Coach has ever wanted from this lawsuit is to have his job back, is to go out there coaching the team he loves, the players he loves, and to be able to thank God at the end of every game. Before he started his very first day as a coach at Bremerton High School, he made this commitment to God that win or lose, he's going to say a prayer right there, right after the game. And he honored that commitment for years until the school district officials told him to cease that prayer, and he had to go hide his prayer somewhere where he could be out of view of students. And so the Supreme Court clarified that sort of censorship is not required, that schools should not treat religion as something that needs to be hidden from students' view, and instead needs to respect religion and treat it in the same way that other private expression is allowed.
Right, because it's not mandating anything, and this kind of discrimination, especially when it comes to Christians in America today, has just become too commonplace, and they're fearful to say anything about it because, you know, it's the old story. Maybe if I just keep quiet, everybody will forget about it and let me go on. It was the same in the Maine school case that you guys also just recently won. Tell me a little bit more about that case.
Yeah, so First Liberty, along with the Institute for Justice, represented some families out in Maine that were seeking tuition assistance to be able to go to a private religious school. But the state of Maine had this neutral benefit program where it would assist, pay for students to attend private high schools throughout the state, but not for, but it specifically excluded religious schools that teach their religious perspective. And the Supreme Court said that this exclusion, saying that you would otherwise be eligible for this neutral program, but are not because of your religious faith and the fact that you actually abide by it and want to teach from that perspective, that's religious discrimination, this sort of religious exclusion. So it is a similar thing that's going on with the Coach Kennedy case. In both cases, the Supreme Court or the government thinks that it has to exclude religion, thinks that it has to discriminate against religion and single religion out for disfavored treatment. But actually, it just requires religious activities to be treated equally.
Let me ask you, Anne, what's the sense of all of your attorneys that do argue these cases in front of this Supreme Court in its current context? I mean, you know, we're watching members of the far left in particular just insane over the overturning of Roe v. Wade. But I have never known an attorney, including Ginsburg, the former Supreme Court justice herself, who thought that Roe v. Wade was good law. You know, are these justices for the first time really trying to be constitutionalists?
Well, certainly, we're seeing cases like Roe, like Dobbs and like Coach Kennedy, where the court is not afraid to go and reevaluate precedent reevaluate laws that have been established for decades. So in the Coach Kennedy case, that a similar thing happened. The Supreme Court clarified that this law called Lemon, which is ultimately responsible for a lot of the anti-religious hostility that we see, particularly in the school context, that is no longer good law. And so that law has been around since the 70s, and it's been constantly criticized for all of its flaws over the years. And it hasn't been applied for two decades. And the Supreme Court finally clearly said, no, it's no longer good law with the Kennedy opinion. So this should have sweeping impacts for religious liberty. It is truly a landmark case that protects religious liberty for all Americans.
Do you think it'll help some of the other cases you have going? I know you've got the state of Oregon that was making the bakers pay money for operating a business, their own business, according to their religious faith. I know you also have a postal service guy who just wanted to, you know, have the Sabbath off. Do you think these cases show up in for them as well?
Well, it's certainly possible for the that this case could have an impact, and also the court's willingness to reevaluate that precedent. The postal service case is dependent on yet another case that is poorly reasoned from decades ago that prevents or that allows employers to get away with not allowing religious accommodations, not granting meaningful accommodations for employees of faith who need those in order to participate with integrity in the workplace. And so that is a decision that we think the Supreme Court should evaluate and should return to what the law says. So we are very optimistic for the direction that religious liberty is heading.
Yeah, because my understanding was that he just didn't want to have to deliver Amazon packages on Sunday. Like, why would he, you know, why would he be expected to do that? You know, it's a day that's supposed to be kept holy. When I was growing up, I'm a lot older than you, nothing was open on Sunday. There was no stores, you know, very few, maybe a convenience store here and there. And people observed the Sabbath. You know, it was there was no big deal. Nobody said we had to separate business from religion then.
That's right. And our client, Mr. Groff, he had a very sincere religious belief. He even shifted post offices in order to try to not work on Sundays. He's willing to take on extra hours and work other days and all sorts of accommodations. But his employer, the post office, kept scheduling him for those Sunday Amazon package deliveries, even though this is his sincerely held religious belief. And the post office is, as I mentioned, relying on bad precedent from decades ago that allows employers to get away with not granting religious accommodations that they are able to grant.
So the justices are going to look at TWA versus Hardison, I guess, is the one that they're going to have to revisit, right?
That's the case. We're hoping that the Supreme Court will take up this case and will revisit that one.
I'll tell you one thing that has been extremely pleasurable for someone like me, and I'm not an attorney. I gave birth to one, but I'm not one myself. But over the last 30-plus years on the air, I've read a lot of Supreme Court opinions, you know, both the majority and minority dissents. And the opinions that have come through since last week, particularly Clarence Thomas's on the Second Amendment and Alito and Thomas's on the Roe v. Wade case, were so brilliantly written. I mean, we're going back to the golden age of what does the Constitution say, not what does society say and what do people want to happen. It's amazing. And even for a layperson like myself, these are, you know, brilliant jurists. And I'm just so grateful because it's enough already. It's time for a revival in this country. And I think that lawyers like you people at First Liberty Institute are paving the way for people of good hearts to reevaluate. Where are we going as a country? So thank you, Stephanie. I thank you for all the great work that you all do. Congratulations all around.
Thank you. And if anyone wants to follow this case or any of our cases, you can visit us at firstliberty.org.
Exactly. Thank you so much. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Go support First Liberty. They got to, you know, they got to do these things for these clients pro bono. So, you know, give. And if you need legal help on a case that has to do with religious freedom, go to the website. They can reach out to you. All right. Don't forget, coming up at 1 o'clock will be Dan Bongino. At 4 o'clock, Ben Shapiro. At 6 o'clock, WPTV News. And then, of course, Jen and Bill will be back here tomorrow morning at 5:30. And we'll start the Madcap Merriment all over again. Oh, I love that expression, Madcap Merriment. But for now, stay right where you are. I'm going to be talking with R.J. Howman from the Federation of American Immigration Reform, because this is Joe Biden's mess, and it doesn't look like he has any intention of fixing it. I'll be right back. Welcome back. Joyce Kaufman with you. And now I have an opportunity to check in with the Federation of American Immigration Reform and its head of government relations, R.J. Howman, a good friend who has to be looking like I am at what's going on at the southern border. And just, I mean, how do they get away with this? Now you got 46 dead migrants in a truck, and it's like it's not even cracking the front page of the New York Times. But it's every day, it's a different story. Every day it's a besieged border. Every day it's four Afghan refugees coming across the southern border. I mean, is this... Now we have at least a judge in New York struck down the non-citizen voting law, but that's a small victory considering what we're going through every day.
Yeah, I mean, there's no victories when it comes to immigration and border security right now. I mean, in Southwest border encounters, you know, how they measure people coming across the border, set another single-month record in May, about 240,000. And Joyce, that's the highest number of monthly encounters in the last two decades. And since he's took office, there's been 3 million at the southern border alone. May was the 15th straight month with more than 150,000 encounters. Again, the biggest thing here is then they're processing these people into the country. So it's almost a two-pronged crisis, of course. You have a lot of these people coming in under the guise of legality. They're exploiting an asylum process. But again, as you mentioned, with that very tragic semi-truck where they found around 50 migrants dead in the back of it. The smuggling operation is still working very well, not smoothly, but again, they're still coming into the country in mass. And the Border Patrol, there's nothing they can do to stop it because they're so bogged down in processing by design.
Yeah, no, they can't keep up with these numbers. And I love the way you have all of these, Democrats who are in districts where there's no denying that there's a crisis of humanity happening, particularly in Texas and in Southern California and in New Mexico. All of a sudden, they care about the border. I don't believe that for one minute. As soon as the election is over in November, they'll go right back to supporting the policies of this administration.
Yeah, we're still hopeful to some extent, though, with Republicans taking back both chambers of Congress, that we will, lead the charge on putting forth a actual solution to address the crisis. But, will Democrats realize that they got a stern rebuke from voters in November and pivot away from open borders policymaking? Probably not. Again, this is all by design. The party marches in lockstep of dismantling every facet of immigration enforcement, keeping our borders wide open. And again, the top priority is amnestying every single illegal alien in the country. Now, again, even those that aren't on the border, you do have some Democrats who are realists down there, notably Henry Cuellar and Vicente Gonzalez, who are in tough elections. But a lot of these Democrats around the country need to realize that they're in border states as well. In May, CBP seized 46,000 pounds of drugs. The fentanyl seizures, since the start of the fiscal year, could pretty much kill every American twice. Yeah. Again, this is just a nonstop flow of drugs and migrants coming up here. And again, the Biden administration isn't doing anything to stop it.
And now, of course, we have the Supreme Court also with a case about immigration policies that I assume will be getting a decision on this week. So this could be a very important week for immigration law as well.
Yeah, to some extent, I'll put it like that. Again, the Migrant Protection Protocol's ruling that we anticipate to probably drop tomorrow. Again, it's not going to force the Biden administration to operate it to max like the Trump administration did. Again, they're complying with a court order at the district court level that they're doing it all for show. They only opened one little area, and they think they've only done about 4,000 migrants have been enrolled in the program. So again, it's all for show. If they have to take a step back to adhere to the Administrative Procedure Act and properly, rescind the Migrant Protection Protocol to remain in Mexico, again, it's not going to do much. Again, you need a new administration. You need a new Congress to come in there and force the agencies that are in charge with keeping our borders secure to actually keep them secure, to do their job. Department of Homeland Security, not Department of Homeland Insecurity.
And I understand that one of these nominees, one of the Biden nominees for ICE, had to step away. So now we wait anxiously to see what other, person who, a man who we all know had written frequent, when he was sheriff, had written frequently about how there should be no border, between the two countries, between Mexico and America. So this is the caliber of nominees.
Out of whack their priorities are. Again, when you tap somebody to lead an immigration or an immigration enforcement agency who works for a sheriff's department that terminated their relationship, their 287G agreement, what's that agency that he's in charge of running? So, again, they have guys, tapped to lead CBP, ICE, and then DHS itself, who all hate the very role of the agency is to keep our borders secure and to enforce immigration laws. But, it's sad, though. Ed Gonzalez, obviously, he was charged with domestic – he was accused of domestic abuse. And, that obviously shows that he is clearly unfit for the role outside of his immigration stance. But, heck, the fact that he was a sheriff, I guess, is maybe even a silver lining for us. I can't imagine who the next ICE nominee will be. I'll venture out that it will be somebody even more crazy.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Well, thank you so much, RJ, for coming back and finishing up our conversation. I always appreciate it. And thanks to the good folks at the FAIR, Federation of American Immigration Reform. Go to the website, fairus.org, contribute, look things up so you know what you're talking about. Thanks, RJ.
Yeah, thanks, sir.
All right. And that's pretty much wraps it up for me. How do you like that? Every day I sit here and I think to myself, surely there can't be any more bad news. And then, Gavin Newsom will say something like, okay, We're going to suspend the highest gas taxes in the U.S. temporarily here in California, and we're going to dole out checks for $1,000 apiece. Well, that's that's a brilliant idea, Gavin. And now they're floating his name as the potential nominee if Joe Biden decides not to run, although he's really angry that people say that. And Kamala, forget it. She's dreadful. I thank you for your time this time. Until next time, my plan is to be back here tomorrow at noon, if it be his will and he delays his coming. What lies behind us and what lies ahead of us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. So wherever you are, just be yourself. Everybody else is taken. May God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.